The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's July the 12th, 2024, and this is episode number 45. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Polestar Concept BST debuting at the Goodwood Festival of Speed, Toyota investing in the Iona charging network, Tesla reportedly delaying the Robotaxi event, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, and today I am joined by special guest Lacey, host of the Misco Electric YouTube channel, along with Francie, producer and host of the Out of Spec podcast, and of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Logistic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of channels, and I believe this week that office is actually a Porsche Taycan GT with a WISAC package somewhere in Germany near Switzerland, which is pretty cool. All right. Welcome, everybody. Good to see you. And I hope you're all feeling well this morning. So our regular viewers out there will notice that our Tom and Martin aren't with us this morning. They will be back. We haven't let them go, but Tom's on vacation, sailing one of the seven seas somewhere. And Martin is unavailable today. Just a coincidence, they're both not there on the same day. But we're very fortunate to have Lacey and Francie with us to helping us out today. So I'm pretty happy about that. All right. So a ton of stuff to talk about today, but I guess let's get updates from our special guest. So Lacey, I mentioned you run the Misco Electric YouTube page, but to drill down a little more, besides EV reviews, including lots of e-bike reviews and special event coverage, you've been doing a weekly news show for the past 3 months or so called The Current. So can you tell us a little bit about that and what else you're doing these days?
Yeah, so as you guys probably know, I was on the Inside EVs podcast and they shut it down to reformat it. After obviously you guys started your own thing, they needed four other people to do that. So we did that for a little while, but they had a new editor in chief come in and wanted to revamp everything. So they're in the process of kind of rebuilding it and making something different out of it. So then I was like, well, I still want to talk about this every week. So let's talk about the news in a kind of different format where people were asking, can you do it in like a more condensed fashion? So basically what I end up reading throughout the week and what I think is the highlight of news for EVs is what I publish in The Current. And it's about a 10 to 15 minute. I really want it to be 10 minutes, but there's a lot of news every week. So at least I've been trying to keep it 15 minutes and under. And so, yeah, we talk about everything that's going on, whether it's batteries, charging, cars, e-bikes, motorcycles, things like that. So, yeah, it's been, I think 19 is coming up on this Sunday. So I publish every Sunday. So, yeah, tune in if you'd like some EV news.
Sweet. I thought it's gaining some momentum too. I've been watching the views climb, like just keeping an eye out what you're doing. So that's great. Congratulations on that. Also, what EV are you driving now?
So as far as cars go, I have my Rivian R1T Max Pack, performance dual motor. We still have the Tesla Model S 90D 2016. That one's hard to give away because it has unlimited supercharging. And then we have our Cybertruck now. So we got that back at the end of March. And then as far as I just got my motorcycle endorsement. So recently I have a Rivet Anthem on lend right now from the manufacturer so that I can review that. And Tim just bought a BMW CE04. So we have two-wheel electric moto stuff coming up on our ride reviews channel. More recently, we actually had to split the channel up because, as you guys know, with the YouTube algorithm, it's like they really want you to have a niche. And my channel, although I thought going electric was niche enough, I had to split it up because some people that watch bike content don't want to watch car content and whatever. Yep. So now I have a ride reviews channel, Must Go Electric Ride Reviews, where I do all my two-wheel stuff.
Oh, cool. I didn't actually kind of realize that for some reason.
It was a more recent development, so.
Okay. Okay. And I guess there's also a Cybertruck in your household?
Yes. Yes. So we got the Cybertruck at the end of March and have, I think, close to 7,000 miles on it already. So we've been driving it quite a bit, but been enjoying it.
Awesome. Awesome.
Lacey, that is awesome to hear about your motorcycle endorsement. I got mine last year as well. And all I have to do.
We
got to
do a trip.
Yeah, we should. We should. We should like take a class together and stuff too. But the CE04, Kyle and I have been talking about that as well as the CE02 and just how fun that will be. So that sounds like, yes, you're a little bit of the dream over there.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because we've been like hopping on and off the bikes, like switching Tim and I, and basically his feels like the CE04 feels like you're on a couch, like you're like on a touring bike and it's just like low to the ground and it's just like a cruiser, whereas the Rivet Anthem feels more like a sports bike where you're in a different riding position. So it's an interesting difference between the two, and we're excited to be able to do like full reviews on them because the CE04 is like packed with technology, so has a lot of really cool features.
That's cool.
Sounds awesome.
Do you have your motorcycle endorsement, Kyle?
Me? Yes, but I don't have a motorcycle.
Right. I mean, I'm in the same position. I got my endorsement as well, just so I could review motorcycles. And I love electric motorcycles. I'm all about it. But
I have a couple different BMW things in the works. So an adventure bike and a CE02.
Oh, cool. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with electric motorcycles, but it's a very niche, you know? It's like the motorcycle is like a very challenging platform to electrify because range is so important, right? And it's really hard to stick a lot of battery on a small bike, you know, because it's, But things have really moved along, though, since the early days, since the early, like, zeros and the early, like, in the mid-2000s, I think they started, 2007. There's so much more advanced now. We got bikes with, like, 20 kilowatt-hour packs on them out there now. But moving along, Francie, I want to, great to have you back. For those who don't know, Francie did a midweek episode with us a few weeks back talking about her VinFast VF8 ownership experience. So when we left off, you were about to head out west in your VinFast, but had to make a stop in Wichita, Kansas, I believe, to give your car an update, a software update. I guess there's a VinFast store there or something. So just curious if that greatly or even just moderately improved the experience.
100% improved the experience. Yeah, I went so they don't do over-the-air software updates, and most of their service centers and dealerships are along the Smile Coasts, but there's one right there in Wichita, Kansas. So that's luckily like halfway between where I was driving from in Tennessee out here to Colorado. So I stopped there, got the software update, which took like 5 hours. After that, though, the thing that I had noticed most is that it was quirky, it was glitchy, there were always errors coming up, and that is all gone. So those odd annoyances of getting in and being like, obviously, this isn't worked out, all those bugs, they were definitely worked out. We even gained some more information so that you can see more of the kilowatt information when you're charging, not only at the connector, but also what is actually going into the battery, what the battery is receiving. So that was fun. And then I'm sure there's more behind the scenes, but it genuinely changed the experience. But if you don't live near a service center or you don't want to drive to one to get this update and leave your car, then you might be sitting in the world of glitches until maybe they are confident enough to move forward with the over-the-air software updates.
Right. Go over-the-air is like the promise, basically, but not the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With that,
yes.
With not just VinFast, but a few other manufacturers that are really kind of slow to get the over-the-air update thing. It kind of underlines how well Tesla really laid a foundation for its vehicles. Yeah, just being very updatable like that. All right. So, Kyle, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
All right. Awesome. It's going to be a great weekend. I'm going to the beach this weekend. A buddy of mine is playing a big show down on the coast this weekend, and I'm going to go down and check it out and then work from the beach.
Nice.
But last week, you spent a lot of time with the eSprinter, and I want to touch on that really quickly. I don't have any footage of it really brought up here, so but you have a Mercedes-Benz eSprinter. Can you tell us a little bit briefly and what you did with it?
Yeah, so the eSprinter is, as you would think, it's a full-size Sprinter van, just fully electric from the factory, and it's awesome. They only sell it, surprisingly, in the biggest version possible for the electric one. Typically, they'll do like the smallest ones electric to get the most range, but they're like highest possible roof, longest possible wheelbase, and it's huge. And so I drove it for a week. We did a bunch of stuff with it. We did range tests, charging tests. It's 113 kilowatt hour LFP battery pack, which is pretty sizable. It's not massive, but of course with a van, you really, you know, payload is very important. So the bigger battery you put in, the worst payload you'll have. It had like 2,400 pounds almost of payload capacity, which is okay. And there's plenty of use cases for it. It's probably not enough for like a full-on RV conversion, maybe getting close to there. But it was awesome. It charges pretty well. It's just over 1 hour, zero to full. Again, not the end of the world, not Taycan speeds, of course. But
right,
when you compare it to any other van on the market in terms of charging speed, range, usability, clearly it's the choice over the Rivian van in almost every category. The Rivian van looks better, has a better image. I think it's cooler for a fleet.
Right.
The Rivian van might make sense, but if you're really going to use it, I mean, the Mercedes has another almost 90 miles of usable range, almost 200 miles on a charge on highway speed, and much, you know, more than twice the charging performance of the Rivian van. It's the clear choice. So we did quite a bit with it. We loaded it up to maximum payload and drove it up Mount Blue Sky, which used to be called Mount Evans, and which is the highest drivable road in North America, basically. There is technically a road that's like 200 feet higher, but it's like an off-road trail. So this is like, you know, it's the highest road you can drive. And it was really neat. We did, you know, charged it to full in Denver, drove it up all the way, and then brought it back. And huge efficiency on the way down. It was pretty amazing. And made a whole video about it. No one watched it. No one cared. But I'm glad we did the video because I love Sprinter stuff. So we had a lot of fun making it.
Right. So you're saying the Sprinter is a lot more refined than, say, the Rivian or the BrightDrop, basically?
Yeah, well, much more refined than the BrightDrop. The BrightDrop's the least refined of all the vans. Keep in mind the Ford E-Transit as well. The E-Transit's just been updated for this year. I haven't had a chance to test it, but I don't think it's in the same league in terms of usability as the other vans. However, it's also much less expensive. So I still think the E-Transit certainly has its place in the market. And I just think the Sprinter, if for private conversion, this is the one that I think is the most tangible for our viewers, non-fleet customers, to at least go, and they can just go buy one at a dealer. They're available. You don't need a fleet account like the other ones or anything like that. You can just go pick one up. So I thought it was cool.
Well, it's got 113 kilowatt hours, like you said. I feel like there's a lot of room for more batteries in the future. If like they want to put like 200 kilowatt hours in there, they could do that, you know, especially as batteries like shrink. But
yeah. I mean, we could say that about anything, of course, you know, put a ton of capacity in it. But, you know, the target design criteria for these vans are fleets. You know, that is not for the general customer going, you know, not sure where they're going. Everyone who's buying these, or a large majority who's buying these, they know exactly how many miles every day with what payload they're going to be running. And the 113 kilowatt hour battery isn't going to work for everyone. I mean, of course, there's still applications where people, it's not going to work, but there's so many that can be electrified, so many routes, so many use cases that they'll sell every single one they can make easily if the fleets can see the cost benefit. And they're not cheap. These vans are 80, 90 grand. They're not inexpensive.
Right. But you got 193 miles out of it at 70 miles an hour?
190 miles, yeah, something like that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you're in Germany right now, and I understand that you have a Porsche Taycan GT. You've had a good rip on the Autobahn by now.
So actually, I just came from Germany into Austria. I'm gonna go hit some mountain passes after this show, and so I have the Turbo GT Weissach pack, which is the fully $250,000 full rip Taycan. It's insane in many ways, as you can imagine. But I really haven't driven it hard yet. I've been waiting for the video to like experience it for the first time. So I've just been like daily driving it. I had a Microlino the last couple of days anyway. So I had to take it down for a film shoot today down in Lindau, which is like an hour and a half, or in this car, 45 minutes south of Munich. And I just cruised. I didn't even hit top speed because I was like, I'll save this for the video. But I was cruising at like 170, 175 miles an hour. And it just sat there so stably without it, just like I could go to sleep. It's crazy. And this is almost a 200 mile an hour car.
You just needed a little breather because you were ripping the Microlino so hard for the last week. So you just needed to relax a little bit.
Cleanse the palate.
Exactly. Yeah, so this car is just insane. I mean, you can see inside here, I have carbon bucket seats. The whole rear seat's been deleted with extra, you know, like, does it really make a difference? Does anyone really need this? It's so stupid in all the best ways. I love that. So it's really interesting. The main reason I got this car is because I'm spending the weekend at the Nürburgring. And so, you know, I'm ripping mountain passes today, Nürburgring this weekend, kind of doing what this thing is supposed to do.
That sounds like fun, I guess. Like terrible fun.
No, terrible. All good. Yeah, I mean, I just did a launch control, and it's every bit as fast as the Plaid, and maybe even stronger at high speed. It's so fast.
Wow. So speaking of speed, this refresh of the Taycan also charges a lot better than it did before, and it charged great before. I see you shared some charging details here, like you plugged in at 5%, and after 12 minutes and 22 seconds, you added over 59 kilowatt hours. Is there anything else out there that can put on the mile so fast?
But keep in mind, this was charger limited. So this was a slow session because it was only a 300 kilowatt charger. I've done a full video digging into the charging capabilities of Taycan. I was just here more or less showing that it's holding 300 kilowatts still at 61%, which is just insane, that charging performance. Is there anything else that charges as fast as Taycan? Yes. I mean, Li Auto, Mega, there's Chinese cars. But at least that's available to the Western world. I don't think so. Maybe Lotus Emeya.
Okay, that's cool. And that's kind of a Chinese car. That's from the Geely family on the SEA platform, I think. EVKX asks, Kyle, should we look forward to your Audi A6 e-tron world premiere video at the end of the month? Audi made official launch today.
Sorry, you're breaking up.
Oh, so it says, Kyle, he's asking.
No, I heard what you said.
No, no.
I can't.
Oh.
Losing connection.
I'm a little slow on the uptake.
Boop, boop.
I think he can't talk about anything about Audi right now for some reason. I'm not sure what the deal is.
I can only talk about that I made a post with 4 Audi rings on my Instagram, and that was publicly viewable, and that's all I can say.
I thought maybe you were in Paris at the Olympics.
With the 4 rings, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what else was it? So on the other end of the performance spectrum, you also spent some time with the Microlino you mentioned. So that thing's pretty small. But you love small cars and have several, including a Renault Twizy. How does the Microlino just stack up real quickly, like in comparison?
Yeah, well, it's not my first time driving one. What's cool is I always stay at the same area in Munich called Motor World, which is like a whole car-themed area. And I'm friends with the guys who run the Microlino. I know the CEO of the company pretty well. So whenever I'm there, they're just like, go use Microlinos and go drive them. They got a whole bunch there. So I just take whichever one. It's awesome. And so I was just cruising around yesterday, ran some errands, had to go get some stuff in this thing. And, you know, objectively, it's not good. There's no other way around it. It's expensive. They're slow. They can't be safe. I mean, there's no ABS. It's really, right. You know, it's not good at all. But that's what makes it incredible, because it's got such personality and it's so so fun to drive, because it makes everyone's day around you better. It gets just as much attention as the Cybertruck, but people are much less angry, and it's really awesome.
Right on. Cool. Also one last thing about your little adventure over here. You talked we were talking on the phone, and you mentioned these lounges installed at charging stations. So you did a video about these last year, and they were just starting. They're just putting in the first ones or something by this outfit called BK World. Is that the same outfit that you're talking about back then? And what's been going on with them?
Yeah, so I went randomly. I heard about this lounge being built at a supercharger, I think almost 2 years ago. And I went over to one in Essen, Germany. It was somewhere west or east of where I am. Nope, that's not true. West of where I am. And it was cool. They basically looked like a giant shipping container or, you know, some sort of container that was next to a charging station. And it was a really nice, nice place. That was their prototype site. I didn't know them at the time. I didn't know anything about it at the time. And since then, apparently, you know, I just made that video. I went over there. That was such an impactful video on their business. They claim that it really sparked so much interest from even Tesla on building out more. And so now they have an official Tesla partnership and tons of sites in the works with a specific Tesla branded version of the BK World. And so I just shot a whole video just now. So it'll go up tomorrow in about 24 hours from now of a full tour of their newer generation with their CEO talking about, like, okay, he's really cool. The business, they actually build retail spaces, and he was just a EV driver. And he was like, well, I just hated charging in the middle of nowhere without amenities. So he's like, Tesla wanted to put a charger at one of his properties that he owned. He's like, well, I'm just going to put a little amenity pod right next to it. And Tesla was like, yeah, that's your property. Do whatever you want. And then they were like, holy smokes, this is such a good idea. We should do a thing. And, you know, Tesla very rarely partners with companies, and they partnered with BK World. And now it's been announced that they're going to be building these in the US at charging stations. And they have so much capacity that they can sell to other CPOs beyond just Tesla too. So let's say Electrify America wants to put it in. The BK World, the business model is cool. They charge $0 to put it in. BK World will take all the investment and put it next to a charging hub. And then they do a revenue share. And so the CPO actually earns money by having this there, which is really cool.
So where does the revenue part come in? What do they sell to get revenue?
Well, there's a bunch, and you'll see it in the video later. But they have like a partnership with Samsung now, so they can sell like Samsung products in there. But also just snacks, food, drinks, coffee, just like a typical gas station. You know, they make no pizza? Money on the gas, but everything. Automatic pizza machine, absolutely. So yeah, the BK World lounges were awesome. They're really cool, and we're getting them in the U.S. in not the too distant future either.
That's pretty exciting. I'm pretty happy about that. What do you guys think about Lissy and Francie?
I mean, I think, you know, when I think about like vending, that's what I think it should be, like the automats back in the day. Or if anyone watched Loki, like the whole wall was filled with the pie on the wall. Like, can we just have that at charging stations? That'd be awesome. It'd automate it and just pull it right out and be able to get a meal or a drink whenever. I love it.
Yeah. It seems like a low cost way to do this, right? Add some amenities. You think, Francie? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Just automated. People can get what they want. It's robots running it, right? So it's just a line at the future. You don't have to have the attendants and stuff. Yeah, and sometimes people do want to sit in their car, even though I always encourage, like, get out and go walk around or whatever's possible. But, you know, to be able to get what you want, sit around. I mean, it's cool. It's coming to the U.S. Kyle, did you learn any more about, like, where and how they decide to go first?
It's actually up to the CPOs. So they're hoping, you know, they were like, no one in the U.S. knows us. Electrify America, Ayana, ChargePoint, blah, blah, blah. List goes on and on. Tesla, of course, they do. But it's like no one knows them in the U.S. They're like, oh, actually, can we, you know, it wasn't like a paid thing. I just like the lounges. I was like, oh, I just met up with the dude to go film the video. It's like, can you mention to other CPOs that they can like call us and we'll start installing them at their locations? And it's like literally as simple as that. So yeah, I mean, it's not cheap. Like you get a drink in there is like a coffee's like $4, $5, but it's not far off Starbucks. But you know, assuming, you know, that over a 25 or 30 year shelf life of that being there, the initial investment will be paid for. And that's taken all by BK. I think it's going to be a huge part of their business, especially as they're planning for more hubs, more traffic, more throughput. And the guy who's running it, you know, has already a very successful company who's just been driving EVs for 14 years. He's like, I used to stop at level 2 chargers to make the stretch to get places. So he's, you know, just basically taking the successes he's already had in business, in real estate, in building. He builds like every Louis Vuitton store and Apple stores and other stuff for them and manages them. So he understands retail. He's like, let's just do that for charging. It makes so much sense. They've built this entire modular platform for the Cube. So he has a production line. They're like sort of mass produced. They're made completely of wood, actually, to be CO2 friendly. So he claims CO2 positive. I don't know how he got there, but okay. Either way, over there, you know, pretty low carbon impact. But cool. You know, it's not just like custom built. They're literally all, you know, modular based, and then based off of the graphics on the walls and stuff, that can all be chosen by the CPO that partners with them. So if Electrify America wants them, they could do green lighting everywhere. Stuff like that is very easy.
And they could sell ad space in there as well, right?
Yeah. If so the CPO wanted space, to. They have a partnership with, I think, Samsung and Nintendo. So they have like games, a bunch of Nintendo games for kids to play and stuff.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. But these things will all change, and there's room for like pop-up shops inside, and there's restrooms, and it's all, you know, I think there's it requires 1.5 or 2 people locally, you know, basically one on shift, one off shift, and they it's roughly 3 man hours a day of cleaning and maintaining them, which is a lot less than hiring a staff at a you know, at a gas station rest stop.
Right on. So this video comes out tomorrow.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. All right. So lots of news to talk about this week. As we speak, some of the coolest cars in the world, at least, are gathered at Goodwood, at the Goodwood Estate in the south of England for the annual Festival of Speed, which includes a 1.6-mile hill climb. Not exactly Pikes Peak-style hill climb, but it is up a slight grade, I guess. One of the cool cars, or maybe even the coolest, at least built in the last decade, is a special build of the Polestar 6 called Concept BST. Technically, this is a concept since it isn't on sale yet, but it is representative of the vehicle that will be offered to the public in 2026. So I know Kyle has seen a version of the Polestar 6 in person, and I think probably you have too, Lacey. But this wears the BST letters, which is a contraction for beast, meaning this has supposedly a higher performance version. Let me just bring up a picture real quick so we know what we're talking about here. So, sorry, I miss Martin today because he does all this kind of stuff for us, and he's so quick and efficient with it, and I am not. So here we go. This is a little profile view. I was hoping to find so it's at Goodwood, and I was hoping to find some footage of it going up the hill today, but I haven't been able to find any of that. But see how we can share this. I think like this. No, not like that. Anyway, so
that
the six
wing is pretty crazy,
right?
Because the roadster.
I don't think that was there before. I think that's kind of a new element. I just like that it's a convertible. So it's built on the Polestar Performance Architecture, or PPA, sharing it with the Polestar 5, which is a sedan coming next year, I believe. It has dual motors producing 884 horsepower in a 800-volt powertrain. 0 to 62 is said to be 3.2 seconds. So it's not clear in what I've read that there are any differences in power with the BST to the other ones. Just that it has like bodywork tweaks, like the wheel archers are larger, so they can put stuff bigger wheels in there. Yeah, it's got the big rear wing and 22-inch wheels. So I think you've seen the O2 concept, right, Lacey?
Yeah. It looks like this, I don't know, to me, maybe the side skirts are a little bit more prominent, and of course the splitter in the front too. But yeah, I mean, I think it looks awesome. And those accents that they have around the ventilation in the hood, those look pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm ready for a convertible, okay? Like,
right?
But I know some people in the comments are like, the MG Cyberster, can we have that in the U.S.? Like, I want more convertibles that are electric here. This is so cool. Like, they're taunting us.
Yeah, I agree. Would love to see a convertible that is electric.
But what do you think about this car getting like a performance designation, but then having like the same output maybe as it? Does that make sense, Kyle? Is that what's happening here? Or am I missing something?
It's not enough power.
884 right. horsepower, I think it is.
I'm sitting right, which you would with think like 1100 horsepower feet. Yeah, but it's not spoiled. It's that's going to cost the same amount as this Taycan, right? And it's maybe more.
Well, Chinese company, so maybe not.
I think the Polestar 6 was $250,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it's right up there. Yeah, it's right up there with that.
This is more than the standard 6, which I think was 200 or 240,000, something like that. And it's like it's got so much less power than an $85,000 Plaid. Like, come on, let's go crazy. Put 2,000 horsepower in it.
Like it's the Avaya X that crashed.
Yeah. We want stuff that crashes. I mean, the point of these cars are to be wild.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, it is like the same performance as like a Tesla Model 3 performance, basically. It's like the same, you know, I think the Tesla Model 3 is quicker even, which is kind of like, and it's like, you could buy like half a dozen of them with the money that you pay.
Okay, so to counteract my own point, which is the point I typically make, we don't drive cars on paper, we drive them on pavement. So numbers do not tell the full story. Every car has its own character, its own unique portions about it. And very rarely are you wide open throttle. So, you know, the car needs to do a lot more than just be fast. And this looks cool. I'm sure it's going to have good materials. It's definitely going to be the unique choice. I have a Polestar, as my car. I really like it. It's a unique car. It doesn't drive particularly amazing in any category, I would say. But it's just cool, and I like that. So I think a lot of people are going to be like, this is cool, and they'll like that.
Intellective Ventures mentions that the Hummer EV truck is one of the few EV convertibles we can get. Yeah.
That's Lacey's favorite car, by the way. She loves that
Is
one.
It?
I yeah, actually like it. The Hummer, but I hate that it has a 212 kilowatt hour battery pack. So,
it needs that to make it awesome. Efficiency.
I hate the efficiency of that.
True. Too efficient. True. Yeah, but I mean, you need that to get the kind of performance, and because that's got crazy range. I guess it could get by with like less, but I kind of like that it's able to go like over 330 miles or so. It can do.
Yeah, but you can get a small battery now, 180 kilowatt hours, small.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were going to make some lower end versions of it, but I think they kind of reversed that decision, you know?
No, they're on sale now. It's like the 2X or something like that, and the SUV you can get the smaller battery in as well.
And they're putting it in the Sierra EV Denali as well. They're giving that as an option.
Huh. Okay.
I love batteries. Sweet. I don't hate them. I just don't. I like efficiency.
Right. All right. So just move along here. The U.S. is in desperate need of more and better DC charging, of course. And the network IONNA is supposedly going to match the Tesla Supercharger network in scale by 2030. So that would be about 30,000 new charge points with both NACS and CCS connectors. So the company was created by 7 different automakers coming together, and now it looks like an 8th has joined. So Toyota says it is now investing in a new network. Not a whole lot of information out there about this. Just basically the statement that, you know, it's investing in ONA. But Francie, what do you make of this? Is that?
Well, I think it's a good move by Toyota, who we haven't seen a ton of fully electric pushing, and they do have electric drivers on the road. So it does seem like every automaker is going to play a role in building up infrastructure and making sure that it's reliable and a great experience, as we've seen from, you know, even BMW, Mercedes, sorry, making their whole own charging network with Buc-ee's. So I guess it's kind of like about time, but it also points to the fact that Toyota thinks that this is enough, that they want to not only be a fellow founding member, but also invest in IONNA. And that likely means that, of course, they're pushing forward with more EV drivers being on the road in the future and having more drivers to support. So I think it's overall good news. I would love to see, I know that they must be working behind the scenes, that whole LLC, that company that's distinct from all the automakers, but I want to see the plans. I want to see where this, the ground is being broken and which hardware they're choosing, but I'm sure that's all still underway to a degree.
It's very opaque over there. I don't know. I haven't, Lacey, have you heard anything?
Not in regards to the charging network, but as far as speaking to Toyota, I actually was in Chicago this past weekend for the NASCAR event because they unveiled an EV prototype. And yeah,
we're going to talk about that.
Awesome. So I did get to speak to some people at Toyota, and it seems to me, just based on that conversation with that person, and obviously that's not all of Toyota, it's just their motorsport division, is that they're really still talking about hydrogen. So to me, I'm like, okay, they're inching towards having more input, and they are investing more in some of the factories in the United States to be able to produce EVs here, but they're still just slowly inching towards it. And I think, you know, I've been saying this for a while, is I think that Toyota is maybe looking for a battery breakthrough, and then they'll go in all electric in that regard when there is some kind of big technology jump, but they're still wanting to invest in internal combustion engines and develop that moving forward. So it's they're just kind of like doing this dance right now, this balancing act of continuing to focus on what makes them the most profit, and then trying to somewhat appease consumer.
But they're also building a factory or renovating a factory, I forget exactly which, to build three-row SUV, electric SUV, in the States for next year, right, Kyle?
Don't know.
Really? Yeah, that's a three-row SUV from Toyota. I'm not sure. That's all I have on it right now. I didn't do a big a background.
A three-row electric SUV?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Actually, yeah. Two, I think it was. Know. I reported on this a few weeks ago on The Current, but yeah, I think it's technically two that they're looking for. Probably one's a Lexus, but...
Yeah, one for Lexus, one for Toyota, I would imagine. That makes sense. But so you haven't heard anything about IONNA recently? Any movement, any news? Besides, someone mentioned there's one, right, there was news of some permit being granted in, was it Houston? Somewhere in Texas. We got a comment on about it here. Yeah, Brendan C. White mentions there's allegedly a IONNA charger coming here in Houston this year, August, October.
That is what is public at the moment, yes.
Okay. So if you know anything, you can't say anything about it.
Well, I don't think I can't say anything. I can just say that, you know, there's no stations in the ground. Nothing really matters until there are stations in the ground. There's Fair. A lot of money. There's a lot of competence. I know many people that are involved, and I'm being kept up to date at least as to what's going on over there. Nothing that's worth talking about, I would say. It's just, you know, like I keep telling them, you know, their viewpoint is like they're here to save the world. And they're going to solve all of our charging nightmares, which I'm like, that's awesome. But like, just put one in the ground first before you get ahead of yourself. So they're very confident in their ability to solve the charging nightmares. But again, they're evaluating a bunch of different equipment. There's a lot of seemingly good equipment on the market, some of which hasn't even been tested in our market at wide scale yet. So I think there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of software concerns. There's a lot of, you know, back-end integration, payment processes, stuff that's all being worked out now within IONNA. And so they're still in the, look, you got to get parties from 7 or 8 different automakers all to agree, even though it's a joint venture, they all have to agree, and that's going to be difficult. There's no way around it. So the decisions on how much to charge, how often they change pricing, what hardware to use, what software they're going to use, the locations that they want to be at, the construction teams that's going to be putting them in, the list goes on and on and on. These are the little details they're working through at the moment, and there's no major breakthroughs at the moment until the EV driver can actually plug in. So that's my view on it, which is they're overconfident, but they haven't even installed one station yet. But I did like how someone mentioned they have the same number of 800 volt capable DC chargers as Tesla, so they're on to something at least.
Right. Unfortunately, that number is zero, but still, they're right there with Tesla, neck and neck.
Well, the thing is, too, is that, you know, Rivian had initially come out and said, oh, we're going to make this huge RAN station, like network and whatnot. And then look at where they're at now. They're not even close to what they said that they were going to with their targets. So it is much harder to get these stations put in the ground than what people think. There's so much red tape, and to get the whole process of installing the station itself is a challenge. But then to add what Kyle is saying on top of it is having to come to an agreement as far as what suppliers and everything that they're going to use to get them put in the ground, and each state's different, is going to be just, I think, a big headache for them, and it's going to take longer than they expect.
Yeah, when I worked at EVgo, when companies would come up, and even including Rivian, and they would be like, yeah, we're going to put up a charging network, having worked putting in that infrastructure for years, anyone working at EVgo would be like, okay, good luck. I mean, honestly, go ahead. But it is very difficult. And when you start to think about all the different utilities all across the US, and they're going into Canada, so North America in general. Yeah, it's a huge undertaking. But yeah, would love to see some tangible outcomes from them.
But they have to have billions of dollars back in this. I'm not sure what the dollar amounts are. Do we know have we heard dollar amounts? Like when they started?
Yeah, dollar amounts can't always speed up permitting. I just tried this week. I pulled the can I pay you double, and can you at least do this? And they said no. So they don't care about money at all. Utilities are the worst.
Right. Well, they do care about money, but maybe not that money.
Right. So speaking of charging, this week, Electrify America also began a pilot project intended to keep people from clogging up their charging stations. It's called the Congestion Reduction Pilot, and right now it's limited to 10 sites in Southern California, 9 in LA, and 1 in San Diego. These are apparently like super busy sites. So basically, charging will stop automatically when a vehicle reaches 85%. So for those who don't know, EV battery charging usually goes to a relatively slow charging speed after 80%. So this now stops the charging at 85 and gives the drivers 10 minutes to unplug and move before incurring idle fees. So this is similar to the approach that Tesla takes. Kyle, how does this strategy strike you?
Sorry, lost you for a second. That's why I was looking around. What were we talking about?
I forgot that. Electrify America, their congestion reduction.
The 80% cap?
85, yeah.
85. Yeah, dumb.
And it's kind of like what Tesla's doing, is similar things at some stations, right?
But with Tesla, you just go, boop, 100. Here's the thing. If EA really wants to increase throughput, they should just fix all their stations. That would solve like half the problems right there.
That would be a wonderful start.
Okay, the next thing is, don't cut people off. People have a right to charge. If a battery can take in energy, I fully believe they should be able to charge. You can just charge them out the ass for charging slow. If the goal here is to increase throughput, then...
We lost you just for a second. Goal is to produce throughput.
If your goal is to increase throughput, so like get as many cars as possible through there, then you can encourage people to unplug above 80 or 85% by increasing the dollar amount or cost per kilowatt hour. But it doesn't seem fair to me that they're going to block certain people from going. Also, what's interesting is they're doing this pilot at stations that, are busy, but there's way busier stations with way more lines in the same area that you would think they would pilot this at instead. So, I don't know. I don't think this is a great idea.
What do you think, Lacey?
I can see both sides of the spectrum here of like not wanting the ID4s of the world to be sitting on the charger at 100% because they're getting a free charge. But at the same time, I'm with you, Kyle, because, you know, as you drive across the country, sometimes there are limited options for charging stations. I know the stretch that I've been taking a lot because I've been doing a project in Nashville is from Michigan to Nashville, and there aren't as many stations to choose from when I'm talking about Electrify America and CCS on that route. So sometimes, depending on which vehicle you have, you have to charge up to like closer to 100%, if not 100%, in order to make your destination where you are planning to go. So I don't know. To me, it's like, I like how Tesla implements it because, like Kyle said, you just slide the slider and you're like, okay, I want more so I can get more. And Tesla's route planning also like tells you, you know, this is a pretty busy station. We would like to put you at a different one, or it automatically routes you to that station because it's busy. So it's good in a way where we're starting to see EA implement more of that kind of strategy and tactic to encourage drivers and educate them that like, when they get to a certain percentage, that it's going to slow down quite a bit because some people just don't even know that. So it's good and bad in my eyes, but if you can have the option to just swipe it away or continue to charge, I think that's the way to go, but definitely encourage them to move off when they hit that 85%.
Yeah. And Robert, Anger Miller says 4 EA stations per locations on average doesn't cut it. And I would have to say, I have to agree with that, you know, 4, especially when 2 of them are down, you know, half the time or often, you know, it's just, there's always at least one that's not working, right? It seems like, okay. I don't know if you wanted to add to that, Francie.
I kind of agree with y'all. I mean, I don't think it's ever too bad, generally speaking, a bad idea to run an experiment like this. So right, go for it. I'm not, you know, super in it on their site selection, but I think that trying it out is the only way to do it, whether or not they alter it or whatever, right? It's all science, but I think it is such an interesting thing that we are so retroactive in this market, at least, to try to change behavior. And it's all kind of interesting because it seems to be caused by the origin of not having enough ports, not having, you know, a high enough reliability numbers. And then, yeah, I don't know. It seems like now it's more of a resource scarcity mindset where people are like, I got to charge up, whether because it's free or because I don't know if the next charger is going to work or whatever. So I think it's interesting. It'll be cool to see what they end up doing across the board. But yeah, of course, I think you should have access to the energy if you need it.
Right. Like, I'm not sure how that works. Like, it cut you off. Okay, it cuts off. You can't just unplug and plug it back in, kind of thing.
No, I mean, that's what people do with their...
No more.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, right. That's not helpful. Because sometimes
so
you need...
see people, like, messing with their BMS to show the charger, hey, communicate less state of charge to the charger.
Right. All right.
I just want to comment one last thing on that, Dominic. A lot of people are saying charging more won't work because of the free charging plans. That's true. But as far as I know, no vehicle has free charging for life on Electrify America. And at least in the last year or 2 years, I don't think very many cars, except for maybe Lucid, have free unlimited charging. They now are typically, even Porsche and Volkswagen, are down to 30 minutes. Even new ID4s come with a kilowatt hour amount now, which is the way to do a free charging perk. So I think certainly there's going to be some stragglers for the next year, year and a half of those original free charging unlimited plans left. But maybe even by the end of this year, and definitely by the end of next year, those will have all run out.
Right. Okay. Mark Fitzpatrick adds, Don, I think he means Dom, they're concentrated on replacing old ones before they can add to sites. People need to see whole pictures instead of blaming. Okay. I mean, it's...
Okay, so they should replace the chargers with ones that actually work.
Yeah, I don't know. So we just did like that 800-mile race to Vegas a couple weeks ago. Is there a new episode coming to that this Friday? Or is that coming
Saturday.
Up this Saturday?
Tomorrow.
Oh, sweet. So on the way back from, just to mention that while it's on my mind, on the way back from Vegas, we had the Kia EV9, Mercedes-Benz EQS SUV. What else do we have? Model X, Tesla Model X, and Rivian R1S. So we raced those to Vegas, and we have videos up to video the last couple of Saturdays, so some long videos. So the one coming up tomorrow, on the way back, we followed the navigation suggestions from the vehicles themselves to like a T, basically. So the way back, video is airing tomorrow, probably morning, on Out of Spec Motoring. And yeah, it's going to be, you'll see how the different vehicles, you know, route themselves and how efficient and how well they actually do that. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And but during that time, we stopped at a bunch of Electric Fire America charger stations, and you know, sometimes more than one, there weren't that many stops, like less than five stops. Was it four or five stops? And I know at least at two of them, there were like half of the chargers were not working. So there are still like reliability issues going on with that network. That, you know, I know they've made a lot of improvements, but when you run into broken chargers on the ground, it doesn't matter, right? And Francie just mentions too online that she's been driving the EV9 as her daily driver this week. How are you liking it?
I do like it. So I've been driving the VinFast VF8 as my daily driver. So now this is okay. Let's compare the Kia EV9. Definitely different. Obviously, the EV9 is great. I've tweeted yesterday that I think it would be one of the best soccer mom options for EVs, EV SUVs. But there are some things that I prefer in the VinFast for sure over the EV9. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it depends what you want. Someone asked, like, which should I trade it in for my Ioniq 6? That's up to you. Those are quite different. So depending on what you're looking for. But yeah, it's been cool to compare, you know, the EV9 to the VF8. And
you prefer the VF8, did you say?
Well, I prefer some things, some features of the VinFast, particularly the ADAS. So the highway driver's assistance is way better in the VinFast, in my opinion. Yeah, like far better. I don't really like the one in the EV9 at all.
I didn't like it either.
Yeah, it's odd. And I think generally, if anyone drives the VinFast VF8 and uses that highway driver's assistance, you're going to be very happy. It's just so good. But also, I like how giant the EV9 is. It's kind of cool. And as a small person in a big car, I still have great visibility around me, which, you know, looking at my blind spot, I can see all the way through to the back. I'm not worried about where I am. I'm the first and only VinFast fanboy. Just take it on a ride. You might not think it's the worst car anymore. But yeah, so it's been fun in the EV9. Big soccer mom EV, I think.
Cool.
Someone asked about the leg room in the third row. I'm 5'11", so I'm fairly tall, and most of that length is in my legs, and I can sit in the back row of the EV9.
Yeah, it's huge.
Without touching the seat, which is, it's close, but.
Right. Yeah, I got into it too. I'm like 6'2". I touched the seat, but not, I mean, it was fine. It was like very spacious, especially for a third row. It was like probably the most spacious third row I've been in. But
you could probably live out of it decently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I always think about like, what could you turn into van life? Right. Probably not the VinFast.
All right. So earlier this year, Elon Musk announced that Tesla would hold a robotaxi event on the 8th of August. So Bloomberg published a report yesterday saying that the event has been pushed back a couple months. So typically when the media puts out a story like this, if it's wrong, Elon will speak up on X and say so. He didn't this time that I've seen. I don't know if anyone else has seen anything, any mention from him yet. But I feel like it's safe to assume that Bloomberg has this right. So, Lacey, I was going to ask you what your takeaway is from this, and what does it say about Tesla that hasn't said anything about publicly about the changes yet?
I mean, to me, I was thinking when they announced it August 8th, I was like, I was like, there's going to be a delay. I just always thought that because I'm like, this seems somewhat like one of Elon's typical behaviors of like, hey, we're going to do this, and then everyone scrambles to try to make it happen behind the scenes. And so I wouldn't be surprised if this is true. I mean, he, like you said, he hasn't said anything yet that I've seen, but it would make sense that they would delay it. And I heard it's because they want to, you know, make some differences to the vehicle itself. To me, it doesn't seem like, in my opinion, I haven't experienced the latest version of FSD, but it doesn't seem like it's ready yet. And I know that it's probably just a reveal of the vehicle itself, and that the deployment of the actual vehicle with the technology in it isn't going to be close. It'll probably be, you know, Roadster story where it's like years later. But, you know, that's my take on it, is I would love for them to come out with something that actually hits the market and can service people that are looking for that type of, you know, service. But also at the same time, you know, we saw a few weeks ago that Remots had a brand that's called Vern that they're launching in Croatia first, where they're coming out with a robo taxi. So some of these brands are starting to get closer and closer to launching a similar type of service. So it seems like it's kind of a rush to see who can do it first tangibly, not just in like small pockets of like San Francisco where they're doing pilot tests, or Arizona where they're doing pilot tests.
I was just checking my own card to see if I've got an update yet. There's an update up there now, I believe, that has that takes the nags away from the FSD program, and I don't have it yet, but I do actually want to turn my charging back on. All right. Yeah, so Kyle, have you heard anything about, haven't heard anything about the robotaxi at all? If it's supposed to launch, was it supposed to launch with like FSD fully working and all the software all worked out? Or is this going to be the vehicle?
I don't know if Tesla's even, fell over there. I don't even know if Tesla has even like made any official announcements about robotaxi in the near recent times, have they? Other than just mentioning it, I don't think any of the small details have been ever said by Tesla. It's all speculation.
Right.
Yeah, well, there was some stuff in the Walter Isaacson book, but it was like not in detail.
Okay. Yeah. Don't know anything about that. No, it's not something I've followed very closely. I everything that I've heard about it just seems to be someone made something up.
Okay. Yeah. So not a whole lot to talk about there really, but yeah. Should be aware, I guess, because a lot of people were. But it just strikes me as weird that, you know, if you have an event and then you change the date, you should probably say something publicly about that, though, you know, and not rely on like media reports with insiders to kind of, you know, publicize your scheduling of event scheduling. Like, are people are buying plane tickets and clearing their schedules, you know. And
it was kind of like that with Cybertruck, too, though.
Sorry?
Yeah, I don't think Tesla invited people to a thing yet.
Officially. No, they haven't, because the invites haven't been sent out, but you know, Elon put it out there on, you know, on oh,
did we lose on Dominic?
X.com. 8-8. Oh. Sorry?
Oh, no. Sorry. I don't know. It all froze weird for me. I apologize for interrupting if I did.
That's okay.
It looked like Dominic stopped and Lacey and Francie were like, "Where did he go?"
Did I stop you guys?
No.
I don't know.
Okay.
I did.
I made a face because I heard that some people were told a certain date, but then nothing has been updated. So.
Okay.
Obviously, that's not me.
Okay. We'll just see what happens with it. And, you know, I'm personally, it's not really a big thing for me, regardless. Either way, it's a robotaxi. I like driving cars. And autonomous cars don't really have a whole lot of appeal to me, but maybe in the future. Another, sticking with Tesla, though, some other good news that we want to talk about. Very good news, actually. If you like the Model 3 and need an affordable EV with a lot of range, the Tesla Model 3 long range rear-wheel drive is back on the menu. So for $42,490, that's $34,490 after the federal incentives, you can get the refreshed Model 3 in stealth gray with a sweet ventilated seats and 363 miles of EPA range and a 4.9 second 0-60. I don't know. Is this the deal of the decade, Francie?
Oh, well, I mean, it's a great deal. It's one of the least expensive. I mean, if not... Well, I don't know. It's an incredibly inexpensive electric vehicle from an automaker that has been around for so long that does make a pretty quality product. So I think that, yeah, if you like range, if you're not really worried about the all-wheel drive and you're down for a sedan, an electric sedan, I think it makes sense, unless you don't like Tesla or there's other features that you like in other automakers brands more. It's a great deal. I think it's really... Yeah, I mean, if you're in Colorado or another state where you get like $5,000 more or whatever it is, it's starting to move towards the direction of pricing that I want to see generally.
Right. I mean, $35,000, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a $35,000 car, which is amazing. I mean, I paid close to that. I have the almost the same car, except mine does. I have a subwoofer, a better stereo, I think, it possibly a mine, and the passenger seat has some controls. I'm not sure that this one has, but it might can do like 145 miles an hour or something. I don't know. And this can only, this tops out at 125. But other than that, this is like nice and quiet and new, full warranty. 35, man, it's a pretty sweet deal. I don't know. You have any thoughts on it, Lacey?
Yeah, I mean, we see that Tesla seems to be somewhat struggling on the demand side of things. And of course, having another configuration available for people that is a little bit more affordable, but still provides the range, is a lever that they can pull in this regard. So I think it's really good for Tesla to be able to capture more people that are looking for that type of a vehicle. They obviously have a lot more levers to pull to increase demand, whether it's bringing back the referral program or offering charging, you know, bonuses and things like that. So really good to see that Tesla is responding in a way to provide more configurations for more people to jump into owning an EV.
Cool. Kyle, I was going to ask you something about it, but I forget exactly what I was going to ask. I don't know. What are your thoughts real quick on this? I was going to ask you, how many actual miles do you think this gets on the highway? Take a 363 EPA. What's that translate to in Tesla?
Depends, because the long range rear wheel drive pretty much matches, or sorry, the short range, standard range rear wheel drive pretty much matches EPA. So right. We'll have to see. I'm not sure what motor they're using, whether it's the rear of the dual motor or if it's the single motor out of the LFP car. I'm sure the specs are on there. I haven't dug into it, to be honest, but all I can say is I owned a long range rear wheel drive, very similar to your car, Dominic. That car was magic, just drove great. Take the weight off the front. It was a nicely balanced car. It had great range. On the website, at least, it says this one has the full premium sound system.
I don't think so. I looked all over that.
It's a rumor that it's a typo, but if it's a typo, they'll just change it on the website in 2 seconds. Right. So I don't know how much I believe that, but we'll see. It doesn't matter either way. The standard stereo was fine. I think there's upgrade possibilities all around.
I was looking at that last night because I was digging into that stereo rumor, and you know, why can't they just add it as an option? Like, you know, sell you the base one and like a couple $1,000 or $1,000 upgrade gives you the big one. It'd be nice if there were options and you weren't just stuck with, you know, what comes with that rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in Tesla's product planning, but I will say I would imagine any extra additional option they add is more manufacturing complexity, more complexity when it comes to stocking their inventory. Where do you put certain cars with certain configurations versus just having, you know, a few different specs to choose from? I think ultimately it's the complete opposite of Porsche, but it seems to work both ways for each automaker. And but back, regardless of that, on a larger scale, this seems great. It's $5,000 less than all-wheel drive. It's going to have plenty of performance for what most people need. And looks great. It's going to charge great because it's got presumably the Panasonic battery in there. And really excited to test it.
Gary Clark asks, battery? 4680? I think it's the Panasonic 2170s in there. Pretty sure. Yeah, because it's available with the federal incentive. So it's not the LG batteries. And I think they would say, I'd say there'd be more clues if, I don't think the, yeah, I don't know if, it's the 2170s, I'm pretty sure. Anyone have any other thoughts they want to share before we move on? No. Okay, so last weekend at a Chicago street race, NASCAR and ABB announced their electrification innovation partnership and unveiled a new electric prototype. So it was developed in collaboration with NASCAR's OEM partners, Chevrolet, Ford, and Toyota, and was built by the engineers responsible for the next-gen car and the Garage 56 entry at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So it features three starred UHP six-phase motors, one at the front and two in the rear, which is like the same configuration, Kyle, that you saw in the Ford F-150 Lightning that went up Pikes Peak. from the same start. It's those UHP. I think it was ultra high horsepower that stands for, but has a 78 kilowatt hour liquid cooled battery, produce 1,000 kilowatts or 1,341 horsepower at peak power. Lacey, you were there at the race and got to see this thing close up. We get that it's fast, but NASCAR isn't going to be racing EVs anytime soon, are they?
No. So they announced the prototype, but they did not announce a series. So that is still, I think they want to see fan reaction. And, you know, one main thing, we did a lot of man on the street interviews. I'm going to have a couple videos coming out about not only the car itself and the event that we were at, because we were able to see it on track as well, but also a series of sentiment from NASCAR fans about what they think about electrification. And I was actually kind of surprised that, you know, it was a fairly decent response for this vehicle, but also people want noise when you consider NASCAR. Like, they really want a sound, and this has a sound, but it's not even close to what you hear when you're at a NASCAR race. So that is kind of one hang up for a lot of people. But yeah, it was quite interesting to see it on the track. It was really exciting, and I was pretty impressed by it. But no announcement of whether or not it's going to be coming to fruition in any way for NASCAR. So kind of test the waters type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of sound, like, you're the only person that I found any footage at all of this car, and we can hear it go by on this little drive-by. So it definitely sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
How was that in real life?
They only invited a couple of people, so it was kind of a, I don't know, it was me and basically Monroe Live that came for the event. So they have, I think, some footage and been publishing some videos. And of course, then us, I published this the day that this morning that it happened. But yeah, it's pretty awesome to see David Reagan, who is a NASCAR veteran, was the one who has been testing it out in Martinsville for the past like year or so. And, he got behind the wheel. I got an interview with him too, but my video is probably going to come out sometime this weekend. So stay tuned for that, but we'll go kind of details of it because I got to speak to the NASCAR engineers about it as well and get a little bit more information about what exactly is different from the next gen as far as components, but also what makes it different as far as this being a collaboration between all the automakers. So I got interviews with each of the OEMs, basically managers of the motorsports divisions, Toyota, General Motors, and Ford. And everyone was pretty excited about this. And I think that for a long time with NASCAR, they only have three OEMs involved in NASCAR right now. And I think they want to have the potential to add more to the mix. And this is also a test for seeing what other OEMs think, because they want to meet their sustainability goals or their electrification goals. And to be able to kind of combine the two in a realm that is sensible to go electric. I mean, NASCAR is known first, obviously, stock car, it's in the name. And this is also a CUV platform, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So for right. them, to it doesn't fit that typical sedan vibe. And I think it would be sensible for them to come out with a series that is an electric platform of CUVs, which is one of the top selling segments in the, if not the top selling segment in the United States. And it seems like it would make sense if you want people to be interested in high performance vehicles that then they can drive to work on Monday. So,
right. I don't know if you've clued in this at all, Kyle or Lacey. Have you heard anything about this vehicle, this collaboration, a new series, a racing series, electric racing series from NASCAR? I'm not sure how that would work, how that would really go over, you know? I don't know. I need to be convinced, I guess. I need to, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, yeah, they have a truck series, and they also have the Xfinity series. So, like, they already have two that are different than the Cup series, like the main what people know NASCAR of, and they do more street circuits. Like, that was a street circuit in Chicago, which
right
you know might surprise people, is it's not just all ovals.
True. I wasn't aware that they actually had the street, because I've been unplugged from NASCAR for a long time. So I didn't realize they had street racing. So that was kind of cool when I saw that. What were you going to say, Francie? Sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've done a couple interviews and talked to Jerome for the Out of Spec Renew channel, because there's a lot of EV conversions that go on, but there's also like taking an EV, modifying it, and then putting it into the racing world, kind of the hot rod world. And it's just been interesting to kind of see how folks are trying to do that, because, you know, as we all know, electric vehicles are great performance vehicles. You can have a ton of fun, but if you're entering a world that's all combustion, all about the noise, like you said, Lacey, and even the smells, all of that, that's like built into it, embracing the kind of newness might be challenging for some, but I just think it's like, it's fun. You know, it's another toy to drive around. Might as well do it, even if it's not at large scale. Yeah, it's been cool to see.
I know you got some thoughts there, Kyle. I can see you twitching.
I'm just twitching because of these carbon bucket seats. No thoughts.
Okay, you know, but you're probably not excited by the thought of an electric NASCAR, though.
No, I see no translation to a series production car out of it.
Right.
It's all fun.
All right. Well, I'm not sure how long you can stay with this. I know you mentioned at the top before we got on that you were kind of time limited, but you know, just let us know if you need to drop off.
I mean, if you saw the road that I'm looking at right here, which is right up that mountain, and you have a Taycan Turbo GT, all I want to do is go drive.
Okay.
And I got nothing really to do. I can sit here.
Okay. Well, we might end a little early today. We'll see. There's just a couple of things left here. And let's talk about the Capri. Feel free, Kyle, to go drive if you want. I think we got this from here.
See you guys.
All right.
Bye, Kyle.
I didn't want to be responsible for holding him back from the road, because I know exactly how that would feel. that was awesome. All right. So remember how Ford pissed off a bunch of folks by calling the Mach-E crossover a Mustang? They're back at it again, but this time in Europe. This week, the second Ford vehicle built on the Volkswagen MEB platform made its debut with a crossover coupe wearing the name of a long dead two-door coupe that a lot of people still have fond memories of. It's also at Goodwood Festival of Speed this year, so there's some footage of it going up the hill, and I should probably pop up a picture so you can all see what we're even talking about. And that should be it there. There it is in profile and head on and profile. And yeah, hopefully it'll keep on going. Mm-hmm. Sweet. So basically, it's the coupe version of the European Ford Explorer, which is the other crossover on the MEB platform. It also shares, I think it shares the same interior. I took a quick look and it looked to be exactly the same. So briefly, the Capri comes in rear-wheel drive with a 77 kilowatt-hour battery, or all-wheel drive with a 79 kilowatt-hour pack. It gets as much as 390 miles of WLTP range in rear-wheel drive spec, and the 0 to 60 is respectable in either trim, 6.4 seconds in rear-wheel drive, 5.3 seconds in all-wheel drive. Charging is a bit weird. The slightly smaller battery in the rear-wheel drive takes 28 minutes to go from 10 to 80%, while the slightly bigger 79-hour kilowatt-hour pack takes like 2 minutes less at 26 minutes. I believe the smaller batteries, like the older one from Volkswagen, has got a lower peak charging speed. I think it's 135 kilowatts. And then the new pack is like 2 kilowatt hours bigger, but peak charges at, I think it's 185. Don't quote me on that, but it's up in that neighborhood for sure. So I don't know if any of you have thoughts on this car, because it's this is more Martin's territory, but I think it's kind of interesting that Ford is doing this, taking this approach. It's kind of like what Honda and GM is doing, building the Prologue on the Ultium platform.
I mean, it looks a little familiar, doesn't it? the design.
That was the first thing I thought of. I'm like, man, that looks like a Polestar 2, and especially in that rear quarter panel. My goodness. And also Thomas Ingenlath, if you guys follow him on Instagram, he put a really funny story up because he was throwing some shade and thinking the same thing, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me actually, I saw that story and I'm see if I can pull it up. So what did he say? Do you remember, Lacey?
Yeah, he was basically like, I knew that the Polestar 3 was being made in the U.S., but this one kind of caught me by surprise or something along those lines. Like, acknowledging, because Thomas actually was the original designer of the Volvo concept before the Polestar 2 turned into the Polestar 2. So
that's right.
He's before he became the CEO of Polestar. So this was his, like, baby, but like Polestar 2 and the Polestar 1 were his designs before they shifted to create Polestar as the Polestar 1 and Polestar 2. So these were Volvo concepts prior. And so for him to say something, it's like, it's a lot closer to his heart than I think a lot of people understand, not only just being the CEO, but it's like they completely ripped off of his design.
Yeah. I mean, it's super similar. So, you know, so I've talking about this a lot on threads. A lot of people are, you know, a little upset. You know, people have fond memories of the Capri, and this is not that, you know, by any stretch. And a lot of people are just talking about, oh, do we really need another SUV? But I'm looking at it. Is it really an SUV, though?
It's an ID5 also, by the way. It's supposed to be like a sister car to that. So if you look at the comparison of an ID5 and that as well, it's like, okay, you can see some similarity, but at least the rear end of the ID5 has some more like curves to it, so it doesn't look, it's not that straight consistent line that goes all the way across from the Polestar 2, which is a big differentiator if you're going to make like a coupe style kind of hatchback thing, especially that sits up a little bit with its, you know, riding position. But
I'm just pulling up. I'm trying to pull up a video of it going up Goodwood. It's also, like everything else new, is at Goodwood this week, going up the hill.
BYD.
Take the sound off of that, and I guess I could make it big. Yeah,
looks good.
I wish it looked more like the original. Like, I just think that they could have done. I think it's too like soft, like VW's design of the ID line. It's like very rounded, whereas like Capri, it doesn't strike me as like. I wish it harkened more to the original.
Right, and those wheels look. They kind of look like too big for it, almost. Like it's kind of jacked up artificially higher than it really would be if you were like one of the most like stable ride. I don't know.
I don't think it looks bad. It's just that it's like when you know what the original was,
right?
And you look at it at this as like a modern version of it. Like I think there was a lot more opportunity to make it their own. But again, being an MEB platform, it's, you know, who knows what the restrictions were as far as what they were going to decide to do with design and implementation for the platform.
So what do you think about that approach of using the same names for a really very distinctly different design, like they did with the Mach-E, but now with the Capri? Because I mean, the Capri is such a unique shape, like the silhouette is completely different. Is it just handy dandy to use the same name? I don't know, what's the approach?
So we were talking about this on social media, and somebody mentioned that you know, how many people are talking about the Ford Explorer right now in Europe? Like nobody. I mean, it's also a borrowed name, but it doesn't really have, you know, it's like a name of a boring kind of SUV, and I don't know if they even had that in Europe, but so it's not really, you know, but so
really a real Explorer anyway. I don't know. To me, it's right. I don't know why they called that an Explorer either.
But I don't think it's getting it's not really blowing up in the media, or it doesn't really have a high profile, I think, over there. I think giving it the Capri name, it gives it
like a... They did that big, campaign with the girl that went across the globe with it. Oh. But that was, like, the only thing that I saw that was some kind of a publicity effort. I think her name was Lexi something. She went around the globe in a Explorer.
Right, which is pretty cool. Okay, so big, you know, huge effort, big press, ta-da, and you know, it's kind of, I feel like it's forgotten. Like, I don't know what it's, I don't live in Europe, so I'm not sure how, what kind of a presence it has over there in the marketplace, but I feel like the Capri at least will be on people's minds. Like the controversy just, you know, kind of keeps it in the zeitgeist more, I guess.
And how much was the price? Because I thought I saw someone say that it was like higher 40s. And the, like Mach-E is like lower 40s in that market.
Oh, Mach-E's. Wow. Interesting. I did not see the price for whatever reason. Was it in there? Was it in the materials?
I thought I saw it somewhere. I don't know if it was in an article or what. I can't remember where I saw it, but I thought I saw someone publish pricing for it, and it was like high 40s.
Okay.
Oh, someone says in the comments, 52 euros is the rumored price.
But Terrence,
maybe they haven't confirmed that, but yeah, I saw that there was some controversy as far as what it was going to be listed at price wise, because it seemed kind of expensive for what it was.
Right. Dave Kruger says, no Explorer in Europe, so no brand association. By that logic, they should sell the Capri in the States only. But actually, we did have the Capri in the States as well. It was a little different from the Capri you had in Europe, but it was on the original Fox body. Mustang was also made as a Capri as well. Was it Mercury Capri? I can't remember. I think it was Mercury, though. Yeah, do you know, Lacey?
I don't remember.
I don't know. I had a cousin who showed up in one in the RS. It was Capri RS, like a rally sport. And I remember going for, he took me for like this crazy drive. And I just remember like the suspension being like so hard. I've never been in a, like, it was like a proper kind of racing car suspension. It felt like it was just kind of not comfortable. And he was like driving all the way across Canada in it. yeah. But anyway, so we did have the Capri here, but it was a little bit of a different thing. Yeah, Brendan C. White says, yes, it was a Mercury. Yes. And anything else we want to talk about that? Anything else to really say about that car? The Capri. I kind of wish Martin was supposed to say, but
all electric vehicles from Ford in the U.S., okay? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I get it that they're kind of shortcutting with using MEB over there in Europe and getting a few more models out, but come on, Ford, bring out some new models in the U.S. Give us more variety. You only have two. Everybody else is stepping up their game with model diversity, so...
Mm-hmm. True. I'm really excited about that small car, that Skunk Works program they have in California, Ford, to develop a low-cost car. I think that's going to be really exciting, and I think, I don't know, it's hard to say if it's going to be, you know, positive. Maybe it'll be terrible in some respect, I don't know, but I suspect that it's going to be really good. It sounds like the CEO, Jim Farley, has a lot of confidence that it's going to be a hit. So Mark Scheller mentions real quickly in the comments, enjoyed having Dom in the EV9 for the recent Race to Vegas video. Let's get Lacey and Francie in those long distance drives, and that'd be awesome. That'd be so much fun.
I was invited. I couldn't make it. I had stuff going on. It was right when I was getting my motorcycle endorsement. So they're like, hey, do you want to join? It kind of last minute. Sorry. But unfortunately I had a bunch of stuff going on, but yeah, one of these times definitely want to join.
Sweet. Yeah, I also was unavailable. So next time, maybe we could plan just a little bit more advanced. I mean, I'm not in charge of planning, neither are you. But it would definitely be fun to have some more ladies on the, including Liv. We should get Liv.
Hi, Liv.
Liv just popped in. Yes, I'm late, but hi to Lacey and Francie. Hi to you, Liv.
Hi.
Yeah. Maybe we should do like a takeover, a batteries included ladies takeover episode.
Heck yeah.
Awesome.
Let's get on here and so let's what time, okay, 23. One quick story left. So I wanted to talk about batteries for a second. There's all kinds of battery news out there this week. Monroe has been talking about Saku a lot this week. You're super familiar and great terms with Monroe over there. I don't, did you see his videos with Saku?
I actually didn't see them, but I saw the short form that they had posted on Twitter.
Right.
And they were talking a little bit about it at the NASCAR event. So, okay. Yeah,
they seem super interesting. Yeah. Super interesting sell. Yeah. So there was that. The world's largest sodium ion stationary energy storage battery also went live this week. But it's like the biggest news to me was the announcement that QuantumScape and Volkswagen have announced a deal to move forward in commercializing a solid-state battery that replaces their former joint venture. So it's a bit corporate, but there's actually good news. And it made like QuantumScape, who's been working on this solid-state battery, made their like stock pop yesterday. So if you were into that stock right now, you may have missed your chance or not. I don't know. We don't really do that kind of business analysis here so much. But so Volkswagen's PowerCo, it's a weird name. PowerCo is the name of like the company to make Volkswagen batteries. They will receive a license to mass produce the battery cells based on the QuantumScape technology. It's still pending some technological progress, but I think they're pretty much there. Final specs haven't been announced, but earlier reports said the cell would have a gravimetric density of over 450 watt-hours per kilogram. That's significant. So 450 watt-hours per kilogram. I think right now you're looking at usually 280 watt-hours per kilogram in like the Tesla stuff, and LFP is like way worse than that, like 200, maybe 200 watt-hours per kilogram. So this is over twice as light a battery as like an LFP version of the battery. So really great for high performance applications where lightness is, you know, really important, or airplanes or drones or any, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Basically, yeah. So basically, this agreement allows PowerCo to manufacture 40 gigawatt hours of cells with the option to increase that to 80 gigawatt hours, which would be enough for 1 million vehicles. So anyone have any thoughts on solid-state batteries coming to Volkswagen with no announced timeline?
I mean, come on. Hurry up and wait almost always when it comes to solid-state batteries.
I've been waiting for so long, though. And this is like the biggest breakthrough seemingly like forever, you know?
I feel like we're going to keep chipping away at it. It's, again, newer technology. It's harder to find the material that will be able to scale and be... I mean, because the goal, too, is also to have, you know, better... or a different quality of batteries, which is arguably better if we see it. But also, yeah, finding the material, being able to standardize the production, the sourcing, the manufacturing of it all. It's just so, so fresh. But I feel like we're going to, I mean, what do y'all think? Are we going to get there in our lifetime?
That's a great question. Well, so solid state's been in development for like, gosh, probably 15, 20 years. And it's, the problem is the scale, as Francie mentioned. So it's really challenging. They can make a cell that works on a very small testing protocol and experiment. But when it comes to scaling it up, the thermals just don't, it doesn't work. And also the cell life cycle is not where it needs to be. So I will always say like, okay, I'll believe it when I see it. And it's actually integrated into a vehicle itself, like a car. But I think there are a lot of other technologies that are going to be coming to the forefront, which are more sensible, like what you're talking with the Saku battery, which has no metals in it. Also, there are some developments from CATL and a lot of the Chinese battery manufacturers. Geely more recently announced development in LFP, and the density of LFP increasing so much so that it's actually competitive with what we think of with a traditional lithium ion battery with the NMC or NCA, stuff like that. So I think that we're going to start to see, especially now that in the recent, like last 2 years, that the LFP patents have lifted and now people can continue to develop that more. And obviously China's ahead because they haven't had those restrictions like we have in the US. But to develop the LFP, which is a little bit more affordable, it has really great thermal properties, it has good life cycle, the density is going to increase and we're going to see that compete more in the marketplace. But obviously I would love for solid state batteries to come to fruition and have the ability to, make these promises of extreme energy density come to life. And hopefully we'll see it in the future. I just have been waiting for so long that it doesn't seem like it's coming anytime soon. But everybody that has interest in creating news like QuantumScape, who is on the public stock exchange, is going to make news out of something to try to boost their stocks. So that's how I feel about it. Just my opinion.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been thinking 2025 is going to be the year for solid state for like a long time. And now I'm not sure if it's going to be, you know, it's like, maybe 2026. I don't know. It's taking forever. I know there's like a couple semi-solid, semi-solid state batteries with still aqueous, some amount of aquacity. I don't know how you would say that in their electrolytes, but they're like more like 350 watt hours, you know, per kilogram. So like the solid state that QuantumScape is working on is going to be, you know, still significantly better than that. And I believe there's some companies in China also have some like semi-solid state things going on. But it's still not the big thing. I was really surprised actually that sodium ion batteries like are becoming a thing before we have solid state, which is like the other end of the spectrum, like even heavier batteries, but cheaper. So it's, you know, we need all different kinds of, there's a place for all different kinds of chemistries and formulations. Like cost is so important when it comes to electric vehicles. Like traditionally, you know, they've been priced higher because lithium ion batteries are expensive, so LFP making lower price points possible, and now sodium ion coming in even below that. But yeah,
and improving charging speeds, obviously that's a factor as well when we're talking about these different chemistries, is you've got to make sure that those charging times go down for people, especially that are concerned with, you know, driving and commuting or traveling across the country.
Yeah, hugely important. And that's one of the promises of solid state too, to be a faster charging battery. But already we're seeing with like, even with LFP and traditional lithium ion, like CATL cattle in China are doing like 5 and 6C charging batteries. It's just amazing. Yeah. But it's 1:31. We're up to our time, so maybe we should call it. It's been really great having you guys on with us. Thank you
for having us.
Great to see you, Dom, and great to see you, Lacey. It's been too long
We got to plan a trip. Let's do a motorcycle trip or the
motorcycle
road trip.
Race to Vegas. Oh my
those
god,
those are like that is music to my ears. Truly, yeah. We have to meet in real life too. We've only been URL. Now we got to get IRL. And
I did visit your charging station, by the way.
You visited Tampa, Francie?
Yes, I did.
How was she?
She was great. Actually, she had a line, so unfortunately I couldn't charge at her because she was just so jam-packed full of people. You're popular.
I've got to see her one day.
I'm just done listening to my earphones where the volume keeps going up and up and up, but it's okay.
Probably laughing pretty loud as well.
I can hear you all very well right now. It's amazing. all right. So Race to Vegas on e-bikes. Sound good?
I'm down.
We'll toss some ideas around.
That would be a challenge. Oh my God.
I'm sure we could do it.
Yeah. All right, so I guess that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Actually, first, Lacey, where can people get in touch with you or track you?
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, so youtube.com/MiscoElectric. I'm MiscoElectric on all types of social media platforms. And then if you want to follow the two-wheel electric motorcycle reviews and e-bikes and stuff like that, that is MiscoElectric Ride Reviews. And then I also have an industry channel that we're trying to build up as well for more in-depth industry interviews.
That sounds cool. I like industry. Francie, where can people find you?
The Out of Spec podcast, if you want to listen to me talk every day. You can go over there to the Out of Spec podcast, cover all things electric vehicles and EV adjacent. And it's really cool. So come hang out with me, and you can find me at Hey Francie, almost basically anywhere, any social media. You might throw in an underscore between those words, but I'm sure you can figure it out.
Hey Francie. I just love saying it. Every time I get in touch with you, I just automatically just type that anyway. Hey Francie.
Exactly. Been there.
All right. And for people who don't know, yeah, the Out of Spec podcast that Francie produces and does a ton of great topics and things every day, pretty much, keeping you up to date with everything that's going on, all the different areas of electrification. All right. So if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notification. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again very soon. Ciao.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Adios.